Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Allie from 1 Month, Two Cameras. Hey Allie.
Hi Allie.
Hi guys.
We're excited to have you. I feel like we have like a million mutual friends, so this is just like overdue to have you on the show. So thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.
Well, long time listener, so thank you.
Love it.
Before we get into all the stuff, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners for people who don't know you and what you do and how you get into photography?
For sure. Yeah. My name is Allie O'Keefe. As you mentioned, 1 month, two cameras. So it's sort of like a project that I started a handful of years ago. I think it's been like 4 years now, which is kind of crazy.
Wow, time flies. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a sort of a COVID project, right? Where I was like, I need a creative outlet. And I don't actually do photography professionally. So I just needed sort of a creative outlet because photography has always been a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I started to think, okay, I was discovering old cameras, old vintage, like digital cameras specifically. And so that I started this project where I'd shoot a different vintage digital camera every 2 weeks and then review it. And it was really a project for myself that just naturally grew. But my roots are very much embedded in film, which is why I've been such a longtime listener of yours, because I love film and I still love film. As challenging as it sometimes is with like the modernization of everything and just the cost and processing. And as you know, being a parent, one has less time. So,
yes.
But I started, well, I don't know. I was like, I'm a fetal photography baby because my parents were into photography. My father was a photographer.
Oh, wow.
My uncle was a photographer. My grandfather was a photographer. My husband's a photographer.
Wow. Shut up.
Yeah. So I'm the only one who doesn't do it professionally. And that was a very sort of intentional choice just because I felt like someone had to have like the normal job. So I just have always been very sort of enmeshed in that world. And as a kid, you know, I sort of started off on the other side of the camera because my dad, bless him, was taking pictures of me all the time. I have the most insane collection of like negatives from my childhood, which is such a blessing.
So cool.
And I was always around sets, right? So he was always, he had his own studio and then we were traveling a lot. He did a lot of daylight photography. So we'd travel a lot for that. And I would just join him on shoots around the world. And it was just sort of normal, which is looking back now in retrospect, you're like, that's not normal at all.
Right.
but it was really, really cool. And so I just had this interest in the visual mediums of, you know, photography and filmmaking and all of that. In fact, I was just thinking about this morning because my daughter, my oldest daughter, is 9 now. Mm. And at 9 years old, he had already built me like a studio in my house in Iowa. I grew up in Iowa, between Iowa and New York. And he had built me this little studio with like a video camera with VHS tapes and like tungsten lights that literally caught on fire one day. And I was like, what irresponsible parents I had. But it was like so much fun. And we were just constantly creating and making videos in my room. And like just, you know, I am so grateful to them for like really encouraging me to make. They always encouraged me to make stuff. And then at 14, he built me a darkroom, like the most incredible darkroom, you guys. Wow. It was so awesome. And like put the fan in the window. And I had, our house was weird. My mom had got this house when we moved to Iowa from New York that was really like 4 apartments. And so my room had a full kitchen and a full bathroom and a walk-in closet. It was crazy. So like we were able to build all these cool little spaces, and I had a whole, you know, dress-up box and the whole thing. So had that darkroom at 14, but my town was this very, very small town in Southeast Iowa. And, you know, it was awesome having this dark room, but then I would have to drive like an hour and a half to Iowa City, which was like the nearest big college town where they had a camera store where you could get chemicals and paper and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't drive, and I also didn't have a job, so I didn't have a lot of money. So it was one of those hobbies that I absolutely loved and like completely became obsessed with, but like very quickly couldn't really afford to do anymore. So it sort of petered out. And then in like 2007, I was actually looking back. I was like, oh my God, I got a Canon Rebel XT, like one of the old digital cameras, very early sort of entry level digital cameras. And I was on a trip to London and I was like, I have to take real pictures, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was when sort of the camera bug hit again, because I was now in my, you know, I was like a little bit older. I had a little bit more disposable income. I was shooting digital, so it was very accessible. And then I was like, that opened the floodgates to just like an endless deep rabbit hole of film cameras. And that's when I would say film was actually like weirdly going backwards for me. Because I started on digital in some ways in my 20s and then went back to film and ended up just... I name a camera. I think I probably owned it at some point because I just went so crazy on film cameras and I had the best time, you know, just developing my little bathroom. And I come from the world of like Flickr and Tumblr and Blogger. Yes, and it was just like this wonderful era of internet where it was like super community. Like we had a whole group of people on Flickr in New York, and we'd like meet up, and it was like much about sharing knowledge and hanging out and drinking wine and developing film in the bathtub and like doing all that stuff. It was just so much fun. And in fact, one of my best friends to this day who runs the channel Mamiya 7 Ruined Everything, like she and I met through Flickr. And that was just one of those magical sort of, you know, film just brought the whole community together. And frankly, like to this day, all of my really close friends are still from those early days of like falling in love with photography.
And at that time, I feel like it was almost like the right time for you to be getting into film because everybody was getting out. So you must have got stuff.
Amazing. You have no idea.
You must have been like the treasure chest all the time.
It was ridiculous. Like I got a Rolleiflex 2.8F for like nothing, like $800, a full kit, like the most incredible kit. I got a Pentax 645N and the guy couldn't even give it to me fast enough. You know, it's just like I got a I've had the Mamiya 7 too, like 4 times. My very first film camera was actually from my dad, and that was the Minolta 7000i. And that was when I was really young. So that was like the 14-year-old sort of era. And then when I got back into it as an adult, I remember picking up an Olympus OM-1. And I was like, oh, this is great. It's mechanical. I'm going to learn all the things. I'm going to learn the exposure triangle and do all the things myself. And that camera as well as I, of course, as everyone does, discovered Alex Soth in like 2008, I think it was. Mm. And I became completely obsessed. And I remember at the time being like, I couldn't find a Mamiya 7. So I got a Mamiya 6 and I was loving the idea of, you know, it contracts and you can fold it down and it's more compact for travel.
Right.
And so I got that camera and that was like my first sort of like, oh, I'm going to go out and shoot with a project in mind. And I had the OM-1 and the Mamiya 6 and it's just magical. I still just have so many warm feelings about all those old cameras. They're great. And they were a song a dozen, like they were so cheap.
It's, I mean, I was one of the ones selling. I sold my film school camera. I regret it to this day. I sold my Mamiya, what was it,
645
AFD.
Yeah
Tisk tisk.
One day. I mean, I sold it for like $800. Like,
I know.
You know, like,
I mean, I was gifted, you guys. Someone, it was so sweet. Like, I had really incredible moments where, like, through Flickr or through Blogger or any of these things, like, people who are so sweet. There's so many incredibly generous people in the community. Mm-hmm. And this is Agreed. Still the case today. But, like, what an incredible. So, anyway, I was on. God, I mean, this could have been MySpace. I can't honestly remember how it happened, but one of those old school platforms, I was posting a lot of photos and someone in Portland who was associated in some way with Blue Moon Camera, like reached out to me, was just like, I have an old camera that, you know, I don't need anymore. So he sent me his Contax TVS, which was like in perfect condition. And I was just like, it was just a gift. And then another friend of mine sent me his like Rolleiflex, what is that one called? It's like a Rolleiflex 600. It's that almost like a Hasselblad style.
Okay.
With a waist level finder. And it's like a freaking expensive camera. And he gave me his whole kit. And this guy was like,
jeez.
He lived above the MoMA, you guys. His apartment was insane.
Wow.
And it was just a friend of a friend who was like, I heard you love cameras and I was going to sell this, but it's better in someone's hands who's going to use it.
That.
And I was just like, oh. I mean, I'm just constantly moved by, you know, and now I get to be that person, right? Like now I get to send other people my cameras and that makes me really happy.
That's the truth right there. Like, I love that. I miss living in a bigger city. Like now I'm in the middle of nowhere in central Pennsylvania. But when I was living down towards Nashville, it was crazy. Like anybody that even mentioned photography to me, I was taking them a 35 millimeter camera, a box of film, a developing tank, a mono bath and being like,
so great.
Here you go. I was pushing it on everybody. It was crazy.
That's such a smart, like, little kit to give to somebody. Like, the with the mono bath.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, once you have that first taste, you're like, oh, I get it.
Uh-huh. The old magic trick, the old rabbit out of the hat. It's just you pull those negatives out and you're like, wow, this is insane. Yeah.
Totally.
I did want to say Flickr Friday before we moved on past Flickr. Like Flickr Friday, I found so many awesome photographers through Flickr and their little videos they did. I really miss that community. It's crazy how social media has changed so much in even 5 years, you know, just the way it's gone.
Totally.
And it's crazy. It's like a, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like a, not a disease, but like an infestation of like, I don't know. It's just like growing wild out of control, like bamboo or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I am grateful that like on Instagram, for example, there is the following feature where you can like drop down the menu and just look at the people you follow. Cause I just,
true.
I can't keep up otherwise. It's just too much. And it's constantly like, you know, content, I like suggested content or ads or whatever.
Right.
I'm like, I don't really have time for this.
No. And it's always asking if I want to see more like this. It's like, really? Come on.
the cool thing about Flickr was that it was only on your computer. There wasn't an app
That's
when
true.
We were using it, you know, it's like, so you had to come to it with intention, you know?
And it was just a smaller community, I think, you know, like it was easier to discover stuff. And it was really like, you know, you'd be looking up, you know, it would be sorted, albums would be sorted by cameras or film stocks or lenses or whatever. And I found so many amazing people that way. And I still credit a lot of those people. I was just thinking about Lars. I won't be able to say his last name, but there's like a, I think it's like Vostfelt or something like that. This guy, he shoots family photography and it's his family. Not like he's a, he's like a graphic designer or something like that. But He's in Sweden. And I remember discovering his work in probably 2010 or something like that. And it's still someone I'm like constantly go back and reference because I just loved his sort of slice of life. He always right. shot everything with his Zeiss icon and a 25 millimeter Zeiss lens. Everything was on Superia. And it was just, wow. he did it for years. I mean, I think he's still active, in fact. And it was just, you know, such a beautiful, intimate vibe. And to this day, I still go back and reference those photos because I think they made such an impact on, this was long before I was a mom or, you know, married or anything like that. But I was like, that's what I want to do. That's how I want to capture my life.
Wow.
I love that. The other thing I like about Flickr too is I didn't want to say like shooting for Flickr, but I would like have, I miss having like a project or like go do a photo shoot with the intention to be like, I can't wait to post it to Flickr and see what people think. And I mean, it's sort of, you know, we do it all the time now with Instagram, but it's such a, it's like too fast now, you know,
right.
like we brush by too quickly. At least with Flickr, it felt like, I don't know. I don't know how to articulate the difference, but it was just like, maybe because you were saying like it's like it was a smaller community, but it felt more like, I felt more proud of my work.
Yeah. I mean, it's
when
interesting.
When it got a good response there.
Like, I haven't thought about it that way, but that's exactly how I translated YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of how I think about YouTube now for myself is like, it's a gear video oftentimes. Like, it'll be a review of a camera, but really it is like a trip I've taken with my family or an outing or something that I'm doing to sort of be able to consolidate a like not a body of work, obviously, but like some memories and you know, what I capture is my life. So it's not like I'm going out necessarily with a project in mind, but I'm like, how can I capture what I'm experiencing in this moment to be able to have a sort of document that, you know, my kids watch my videos. Like they know more about cameras than they should at their age.
Yeah.
And they each have their own little arsenal of cameras, but they watch it because it's like not all of the video is that way, but certainly the openings of most of my videos are some kind of trip or memory that is really, you know, kind of centered on the family. So in some ways that has become like what I like my Flickr interpretation for a modern age.
That's such a good way to share it, though, too. I mean, like me, for example, I'm not a working professional photographer as well. So there's really nowhere to go other than a folder on my computer once I'm done with them. So it's always like, that's what I've been thinking lately. It's like, I see a lot of people that share just the photos on, you know, Instagram, like videos on Reels and stuff. And I was thinking, like, I have so much work that I haven't shared in years. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not, again, to get like a pat on the back or something like that. It's just to, I'm proud of those moments. I want to relive those moments because that's why we take the photos and stuff too. So it's cool. It's good to have a purpose, basically, is what I'm getting at.
I should say I still use Flickr religiously.
Oh, I do. I have it actually open right now. Yeah, I love it. It's a dumping ground for me now. I've kind of turned it into like a cloud storage. So if
that's
I want to
completely
call
how
up
I use
a,
it.
A photo, I can just be like, "Oh, it's got to be back," you know.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but like I literally think in cameras. So like if I'm like, "Oh, what was I doing on that trip to Palm Beach?" Oh, that was on that camera. And so I can go back and specifically remember the year by the camera I was shooting.
Yeah. Oh,
and
cool.
They have the camera roll feature in Flickr. So you go like, it just makes it so much easier for me to go find stuff than like a Lightroom catalog.
I love that. Anytime I'm looking for like a 4x5 shot, I just type in, you know, 4x5 black and white or something. And it shows you your, you know, and then a couple different people's that you're following or search.
Yes.
It's a good search tool too to see what a film stock looks like or to, you know, it's a lot easier to navigate.
I use it for that all the time. I never buy something without like looking at the Flickr results first to sort of see if it's like what I'd like to buy.
Man, Flickr. Yeah, when we started the podcast, we had a Flickr group.
Yeah.
Remember that? We used to
do photo challenges.
Yeah, man.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, I missed that.
Just bring it back.
I know.
I feel like that could happen.
Figure out the best avenue for that. That was fun.
It was fun. And even like on Instagram, like where our Analog Talk hashtag has, it blew my mind. I was adding it to that video reel I did the other day. I was adding Analog Talk to it. And I was like, holy crap, a lot of people use that hashtag.
Oh,
I was like, that's insane. I had no idea. Because now
that's
they give you like the number of what people, you know, how many times it's been used or I'm guessing that's what that means. Watch, I probably got it all wrong. Like three people used it.
So, Allie, I wanted to ask you because your channel has kind of changed a bit. Has that been intentional or has that kind of been just where it's been going? Or what are your plans?
Yeah, I mean, that's like a great question that I don't have a great answer for, but I think it's a really interesting thing because I did start it as like this very intentional sort of project of like I have a very I guess it's like Flickr too, where it's like I like to organize my thoughts and record my like either feelings about cameras or results from cameras or both, ideally, in a way that I can go back and archive and like look back and be like, oh, did I like that camera? Do I want to use that for this project? And that kind of sort of methodical. I was like, at one point, I wanted to be a librarian, so it's just showing up here.
Oh, love it.
So I was like, okay, that's kind of how I approached the channel. And then, of course, it did start to have some traction. And I was interested, you know, it's like the zeitgeist of the moment, right? So it was like CCD sensors and all these things. And it really was a revelation for me to be able to be like, there are all these cameras that I had no idea about because I was so engaged in film. And then I just jumped into like the sort of premier digital cameras. And I kind of missed this era of like, you know, CCD cameras and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I obviously had some of those like crappy point and shoots when I was young, but I'd never taken them seriously. And then I started to engage with those during COVID and I was just honestly blown away. And I was like, I like these more than I like any of my modern digital cameras. And I think part of that was because it was in some ways representative of a film-like experience in the sense that it slowed you down, right? Because you couldn't just like spray and pray. It was just, you know, the processing took ages. You'd have to get this ridiculous card reader for some absurd like format.
Yeah, there's some weird ones out there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Some crazy. The long ones. Mm-hmm. The long ones.
Yeah, that Sony memory stick. Sony. And then like there's a crazy one that looks like a small floppy disk.
Yeah,
so many different ones. So I just went down that complete rabbit hole and I absolutely loved it. And I still love those cameras. But I feel like what happened was I did that for whatever, 3 years or something. And then I kind of hit a wall where I was like, okay, I think I've proved my point to myself, which is cameras are awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so I was kind of like kind of burnt out on just reviewing the cameras. And so I started to, I would say, slow down. That's the other part of this is like there's an incredible amount and I do the most low production videos you can make, but there's just so much that goes into it. And the idea of making a video every 2 weeks was just like, this is insane. Mm-hmm. Like I've got two kids, I've got a life, I've got a full-time job. Like this is not sustainable. And I just remember having a moment where it's like, I am so glad my husband hasn't divorced me yet because like I am like so busy all the time. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to slow it down and start to just transition into some other things of interest. And I have so many interests beyond. I love photography and I think it's definitely my most recurring things, but I'm have deep interest in philosophy and history and art in general. And so I started to sort of just spend less time on the gear. And definitely, like I would say right now, I'm kind of in this weird no man's land where the projects is definitely done, right? Like 1 month, two cameras is no longer relevant, but that's sort of the name everybody knows.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, it's asking a lot of people to just go on this journey of, you know, making as a process of expression as well as discovery and transformation. And like the journey will go where it goes and, you know, bless everyone for being along for the ride. And those who aren't, that's fine too, you know? So it's much less constrained. And now it's just about, you know, a lot of the things that I think are interesting that are still relevant to photography in many ways, you know?
I was going to say a lot of your videos also like are good reminders for us when we get stuck in our heads, like what camera is the best camera? The one that we are using, like that's the one. Like
totally. And that doesn't mean we can't play and we don't love to experiment. And we don't. I mean, I am a gearhead through and through, and that is never going to change, right? Like I love gear. I could sit and literally just. At one point, I was getting such an absurd collection of old cameras where I was like, I should just open a museum. Like, yeah. I'm going to move to Santa Fe and open a museum. That's my mission in life. But, you know, I think, you know, as much as I love the gear, I do try to remind myself, like, it's very easy to just, and I think not only easy, but it for those of us who don't have a lot of time, it is an it's sort of a dopamine hit when you're not able to do a big project or you're not able to do the things that you might want to spend that time on. And you just have to have the discipline to go, okay, that's fun and I can do that. Do it consciously. And then remember to focus on the projects that actually are the longer term bet or the bigger investment. As long as both are being done, then it's, you know, no harm, no foul. But it's easy to go down the rabbit hole of just like acquisition, acquisition, acquisition.
I love that. Because it's I mean, I was just gonna say, it's sometimes I'm like, I don't feel like shooting anything, but I have this like personal project that I'm like, I have to shoot because time is moving. It's a spoiler, it's my children, that's my project. But like if you know, I don't wanna get lazy because before I know it, they're gonna be teenagers and I'll have missed all this, you know, stuff in between. And you just have to pick one up and go take the photos. Don't worry about, you know, oh, it's not the new one. I want the new thing. And like,
totally.
That's
totally
part of it too. And that, don't get me wrong, that feels great. Nothing is more exciting than, oh, I got the new thing that I'm going to go shoot. You know, I am, you know, aware of that that's part of it, but try not to let you get stuck in that.
Totally. Yeah. Perfect is the enemy of good, right? Like, you just got to show up. You got to do the thing. And of course, like, I do think one of the things that was a great benefit to me out of this 1 month, two cameras project is having a piece of gear to test was the excuse to take it out every second of every day. Mm-hmm. So I was shooting no matter what because I had to have some sample images, right?
See?
So it was really fun to be able to do that. And then at a certain point where you go like, oh, now I'm starting to feel like it's an obligation and a job. That's when I was like, okay, I got to pull it back, simplify, streamline, and just focus on like, what is it I want to be shooting? And then put some shape to the project, because you can also just shoot endlessly. Like, who was it that, I think it was Winogrand, like, Winogrand's still around, right?
No,
I'm trying to remember who.
He's gone.
No, he passed.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it was Winogrand who, like, when he passed, they found, like, he had, like, thousands of undeveloped rolls of film, right? And you can just shoot endlessly and never, like, come back to it to really develop it into something. So, like, that's kind of where I'm constantly battling myself is I have such an extreme archive at this point of shooting daily.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just making sure I do really try to make an effort to print my work. And so, like, trying to, even if there's no, I mean, I do the laziest woman's attempt at printing. I'll just take like, oh, these are all the photos from November, and I will dump them into like, again, perfection is the enemy of good, right? So just like get it done, get it on paper. And eventually at some point, maybe in retirement when my kids are like at college, I'll actually turn it into something more, you know, intentional.
What do you use? What do you...
I don't love it. So the thing I used to use, which was so brilliant, was chatbooks, because chatbooks would link to your Instagram and then it would just print your Instagram. And I used to then think about how I post to Instagram with that in mind.
Oh, cool.
And it was fantastic. So I don't know what happened, but there's some Instagram broke the integration, so you can't do that anymore. And so I literally just found I had like 9 book credits that were about to expire. So
mine
in the past,
expiring too.
I just Flickr albums. I downloaded all my Flickr albums and I was just like print. So now I have like a recent trip to New York with my daughter that was really like a core memory for her that I'm like excited to have in print.
Yeah.
And then some trips over the summer to Sea Ranch, which we go to like every year. All these places we go, I just try to get one book made to just commemorate that, whether it's really crafted or not.
I gotta get on that. I used to print 4x6s of everything, like every roll, unless it was a dud, you know, like a really bad
one.
I'd always print, but it gets so expensive, even printing from home, of like through printer ink, using, I mean, I have a great you know, pro Canon printer, but then I also have like the crappy little one that I, but even the ink for that's insane to do.
And then
the storage is adding up. Doing a book like that, right. I need to get into something like that.
The books are great because the storage is my issue. It's just like, it gets so, I mean, it's like an embarrassment. I have so many negatives, you guys, like just piles of negatives. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? But I don't want to get rid of it because, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Books are helpful. They collate.
That's good to know. I'm gonna have to make a note of that and try to
chat books.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah.
I did my Benjamin's all whole first every month, and that's what I haven't been able to get
same
deal. Expiring now, and I'm like, oh no, I gotta make his books.
I fully have like my first daughter's like. And that one I actually spent time on. Like I designed this book and like it has all the things of her first year. And then like my second is like, she was born, right? Like
there's no record.
Yeah.
It's so true. So true. Man. So funny.
I recently watched there was a video you posted, man, may have been a couple months ago about you were like visiting your archive with your old Sony, what was it?
The original A7.
Mm-hmm. That video just really struck me. I was like digging out my old hard drives and looking at all the old stuff because of that. It's amazing. I mean, I shot digital before I got into film again, and I have like a whole body of work I've just ignored because, you know, it was on digital, so like I couldn't look at it was embarrassing or something, but I'm going back and looking at these photos, I'm like, damn, I have a good eye. Like,
well, that's what's so interesting is I love going back through old work because one, you see what you see, right?
Like
there is a consistency in what you've looked at and what you've found interesting and what are the themes that you constantly return to, and that's been said many times, right? When you're trying to develop a body of work, it's like, what do you, looking back through your photography, what do you see are the themes that you constantly come back to and start crafting a work out of that?
Yeah.
And then also the other thing I think is so interesting is just like going back, because I actually also had how I had processed my photos back then.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's so interesting because obviously there's been like trends and things, you know, there's like all the early, I'm now thinking of Flickr again, but like all the crazy HDR that was happening at one point. And I actually never got into that, but
me
I was
either,
very into cross-processing, you guys. Like was a look for a while. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's funny to go back and look through all that stuff. And actually, when I was looking back through the photos from my original, like, digital, my first DSLR, the Canon Rebel XT or whatever that was, I remember using the original Visco packs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that was just so, it's like, that's actually what I think got me into film because it was emulating film. And I was like, shit, I want the real thing. 100%. Like, give me the real thing.
Yep. I am right there with you.
Yeah. And you just go back and you're like, oh, my tastes have like, there are elements of it have changed, but like, what is core interest to me and how I see the world has not changed pretty much at all, which is weird. I mean, it's like, not to say that I look back at my early work and I'm also like, wow, what was I thinking? Like a lot of puddles and reflections. But at the same time, you sort of see what you saw and then hopefully, you know, you've grown a little bit, but it is interesting to sort of see that the themes haven't changed dramatically.
It always gets me too when you go back to look at stuff you shot before and it's like things that didn't make the cut back then were just like, it's crazy. I found some really great photos and important photos to me going back into stuff from, you know, that I just totally wrote off because you're flicking through those 36 shots or 10 shots or 12 shots or, you know, whatever. And it's like, nope. Oh, this one's good. This one's good. All right. Share. And then all those kind of get just left in the dust back there, and then you go back and look at them and you're like, wow, this is crazy, like this one's nailed, like that's what I was going for. How do you miss it? It's just weird that you missed that at that point.
Yeah, I think the editing process is so interesting too. Like, do you find that you're a very instinctive editor? Like, do you go quickly through your edit?
Yep, real quick. Yep. Boom.
You have to like let it live for a minute, you know.
Agreed.
Sometimes walking away and then coming back is like a game changer.
Agreed. And it is true that like whilst the themes that you may be attracted to are consistent over the years, like how you see that expressed can change. And so you do find like, oh, wow, that was a killer shot. Or like when you're thinking about sequencing a larger body of work, then you're like, oh, well, that's actually the banger shot, but that doesn't make sense in this sequence. And I actually like that quieter shot because it marries and bridges these two other shots better, you know? So it's like, I love going back through stuff like that.
It's so exciting. Like, I'm going back through my first zine that I made, well, it was like 10 years ago. And I had this big plan of like releasing a 10-year anniversary for it. And I ended up getting like really sick at the beginning of the year. And excuse me, not coughing because I'm sick.
He's still sick, everybody.
But I got really sick, and that obviously hit the back burner. It was like, get better, get back to work, you know, do this. But it's crazy, the re-edits that I started to shoot and photos that didn't quite make the cut that first time around, like really bridge the gap. Like that, I've learned a lot in 10 years. You know, you learn so much. Even in a year, you learn a lot about yourself and your work and your what you're going for. And it's just really neat going back and seeing that stuff. And there's stuff that I've put away for years that was like, this is going to be a zine, this is that. I've had a group of photos, and today going through hard drives looking for the photos of the three zines that I made throughout the years to do kind of like a little video. I got all jacked up and want to do Instagram videos now, and I can't find where I saved my stuff.
Oh,
it's so
no.
crazy. Like, and I am militant about saving, so I don't understand what I did or where. I might have to like actually get the old computer out and like look on there, because they've got to be on there. But I'm excited to go back and see the photos that didn't make the cut. And it's just a learning experience. There's so much to learn with all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you keep everything? Because like
I keep everything.
Same.
Even bad Polaroids that didn't make the cut. Like the uglies go in the ugly box. And I found I found some keepers in the ugly box. It's crazy. Like you go through those a couple years later and you're like, wow, this is weird, but like it kind of works.
I mean, I love that, because I think I'm always and always have been to some degree, but I'm always drawn to the imperfection, like the off moment, the shot where their eyes are closed or like the hand is in frame in an odd way. And it's like it's really magical, because that is what you get with photography and with film. It's like you just can't capture that in another way. Everything, especially now, like in our age of AI and all that, like everything is so perfect, you know? You're just like, oh, it's just so refreshing to see that.
AI editing is wild. Like, I took a whole-ass car out of a photo the other day, and
it's
I was like, wow! And it looked all right.
It's good. It's great.
Yeah, it's good.
It's, oh, crazy. It's crazy. I am definitely the mom in my my kid's school who like everyone hits up for like, hey, we did this portrait shoot, but we don't love how this hand looks in this one photo. I'm like, I am not a retoucher, but with AI, I can be.
Kind
of crazy.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, that's. Well, I was just on the role of AI. Like, it's mind-blowing that, again, like I heard a couple years ago when AI was, like, starting to pop up. It's like, I want AI to do my laundry and vacuum my floor and give me that time and work my job and all that stuff. It just scares me that that's all Instagram is, and YouTube and stuff these days are crazy AI videos. And they're getting, like, real good. Like,
they're
convincingly
getting
good.
I know. I mean, it's interesting. I work in marketing, so it's like I am literally living the death of my industry right now. Sharing too much, but tomorrow there will be news breaking about thousands of jobs being cut. It's just a crazy time to be alive. And I'm very much on the forefront of it.
Yikes.
And at the same time, like, I see a lot of use in it. I see a lot of benefit from it. And I do think if it can be doing the tactical things, but I do worry about a world in which, like, what do we have left to do if it can do everything? You know, it's like we need purpose in life. We need to, maybe there's a world I can't conceive of right now because it's so far from how we have lived for hundreds of years. But like at one point, democracy was also a wild concept, right? So like maybe we'll get there and it will be fine.
Right.
But it is hard for me to conceptualize at this point.
Me too.
It's crazy. It just reminds me, like, I went to school for printing technology, like running a printing press and working in a bindery and making books.
Amazing.
And it was just crazy to watch that whole industry die. Like, it just went from, like, I was a journeyman at a printing company learning to run an entire bindery. Like, in that 2 years of me being there, that company folded. They sold all their stuff. The building's not even there anymore. And it's, like, such a common story in that world. I mean, who needs to go get brochures and business cards made when...
Right.
When
you can just
web.
Do it at your home printer. You know, you can just make all that stuff at home.
Yeah.
And it just worries me about the artistic job. I mean, music, there's AI music making the charts and stuff like that. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I know. I mean, it is a very, you know, and this has sort of been the trend for a while with, you know, even with digital cameras and all that, like the democratization and the lowering of, you know, the barrier to entry for all these people to be able to make creative work, which is wonderful, right? You want everyone to be able to express themselves that way, but you could make a living at it. And that is just not going to be the reality moving forward, I don't think, for a little bit. You know, like, I don't know what how we answer that as a society, because I think a creative society is crucial to having, you know, a good quality of life and actually like a society that is forward looking. You need art to be there. And we're all just, we are at our core, humans are creative beings. Like, we make stuff. So that needs to still be possible. But how we do that in a professional capacity is really an open question, I think.
Damn.
Yeah. Sorry. Just got super heavy.
Nah. People need to hear it. I need to talk about it. It's good. Yeah. It's good.
On another note, my question for you, Allie, you somebody that takes a camera with you everywhere?
100%. To a problematic degree. Like, I'm sometimes, like, yesterday we love to leave town as much as possible just to, like, get out for a day and hike or whatever. So Vasquez Rocks, I don't know if you've been, Chris, but, like, it's
I've heard
only
yeah.
45 minutes away, and it is so dope. It is the most fun, and our kids are now old enough to be able to, like, boulder and stuff like that. We took them rock climbing, or I should, I took them rock climbing in Joshua Tree. Like, they're into that stuff now, which is so, so much fun for me. And so they were excited to go yesterday, and we bring the camping stove and we bring ramen, and, like, we set up and go bouldering and then sit down and have some ramen and, like, you know, go into town and have ice cream.
Amazing.
So it was really, really fun. And we were out there and I was like, oh, I'm going to... It's just like the most absurd setup. I'm going to bring a GFX, my GFX 50S with the massive 110 f2 lens. And I'm like, what am I thinking? Like, what? So anyway, my point is I bring a camera with me everywhere and it's usually not the right camera.
Well, so that's funny you say that because I ran into a situation yesterday. We went to feed the ducks the other day at the duck pond. And we got there, like, all these geese just came right up to my two boys and were just like, and I was like, oh, let me get my 35 out. And I was like, why did I take the 30? I should have the 28.
Right.
You know, like, it was the wrong lens. I was so mad. Or I didn't even have, no, I didn't even, no, my Leica wasn't loaded yet. So I was like,
That's the thing.
You know, it was just like, this isn't loaded. Girl. I have my point and shoot that has film, but it's too tight of a lens. Like, I just wasn't ready. I was like, how did this happen to me? So I'm like, we're going to have to come back to feed the ducks because I got to get the shot the right way I want it, you know?
Right. I mean, I do love, like, I always sort of wanted to be a photojournalist. And so I love this, like, okay, I'm constrained by this thing and I have to figure out how to make it work. But it's tough when it's your kids because they're just going to follow you. What I realized is with my kids, I have to shoot at 24 or 28 because it's just hard to capture anything. They are literally just clinging onto my body.
Right.
So it's if you're a mom or a parent, I should say, the likelihood is you're going to need a wide angle, like, at all times. And so I do, I typically shoot with anywhere from a 21 to a 28 with my kids just because proximity.
It was so funny. I was so flabbergasted. I was just like,
I love it.
But I'm sure we'll see. I'm developing the film tomorrow, so I'm sure there's a ton of cute stuff.
Oh,
but
I'm sure there's great stuff in there. Yes.
Like the two little boys with all the big geese. Like, I needed that.
It's so cute.
Wide, you know?
It's so cute.
That's funny.
I love that. We used to go to Balboa a lot and do that with the girls. It's so fun. It's so fun. And I mean, I feel like the win there is you had the camera, right? Like, I'm definitely someone who always brings that camera with me wherever I go.
Yeah, we've talked about this before on the show, like feels like we don't have an arm if we don't bring it.
Yes,
you know?
Totally.
And like, how many times my husband was like, what do you need it for? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going to take it.
Exactly.
Back to your little point and shoot time of the YouTube stuff. It's amazing how popular the little digicams have become again. Mm-hmm. Even, I mean, I carry one with me now wherever I go.
Which one?
Right now.
Gotta know.
Right now, it's a pretty common one. It's the Canon Elf.
Elf 170. Those are great.
Yeah, they're cool. I mean, again, the crazy part is when I had these, when they were what we used at that time, I thought they were absolute trash. Yep.
Let's be honest, they are. Which is why they're so great.
Yeah, it's just nuts. Like now it's like Chris, if I don't have a camera, it's this little case I got has a belt loop and I am the nerd now
that has this on my belt loop all the time.
Oh my God.
So strong.
Like a dad move.
Oh, it's
such a dad move.
But I'm so sick of at this job I work at now, when I worked at the restaurant, it was for some reason easier for me to have my camera out all the time and shoot people. But now that I'm at the music store, they're just not in that world. Like people at the restaurant were like,
we're doing pictures. Right. Well, it's a social thing.
Yes, yes. Sure. But at the music store, it's like I get my camera out and everybody turns into it's like when you see the red light recording you, you know, you turn into like they, it's like, no, don't act stupid. Come on. Stop. No, do what you were doing. But it's funny because I made a vow to start shooting more again at the store, or shooting in general at the store, because it's a big part of my life. It's my full time job. I want to be able to look back at it in like 20, 30 years and be like, wow, look at Peyton, or look at this. It's just I'm doing it. I'm using this little point and shoot and I'm enjoying it. And they do really look like film. It's weird how similar these shots. But yet, again, I was so hard on these little junky point and shoots, thinking, you know, maybe I just didn't know much about photography at that time. I should blame myself for it because I was moving quickly. And these you have to really like take the shot and not move. And
I get a lot of that from like people who are starting to shoot those. And it's like, well, why doesn't my shot look like your shot? And it's like, well, you probably just are expecting a lot of it coming from modern cameras.
Yeah.
You can't shoot them like modern cameras.
No.
Like, you have to like do the half press, really hold it. And you have to be aware of your shutter speed and all that sort of stuff. Unless you want to drag your shutter, which is also a vibe.
Oh, it's such a good thing. Yeah.
But I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, those colors and there's a lot of debate around the CCD versus CMOS and all that. And I genuinely don't think there's really a difference. I will say processing the files and the way that Lightroom interprets them is different. So that's interesting, right? They just respond to the sliders differently than modern cameras. I don't know why, but they do. But what I will say is like those cameras back in the day, you know, people were coming from film. They were trying to get people to adopt digital. So they had to calibrate the colors in a way that was closer or as close as they could get akin to film, right?
Like so it's familiar. Like,
it is really like those, you know, the original Canon 5D is just so interesting. It has shit dynamic range, but it's just awesome colors, really nice colors, very Portra-like colors, and they hold up. They really hold up to this day.
It makes me go back and look at, you know, I had a 7D. I never had a 5D, but I had the 7D for a little while, the Canon 7D. I was more of a Nikon digital shooter. Yeah. I really enjoyed the Nikon stuff. But again, I'm looking at like D600s on eBay. I'm like, I can't believe that those are like $200-$300 now they were the rage when I was getting it back into photography again.
I mean, that's what's so fun. It's like the upside of all this is just how accessible. And I think that was why I was so excited. It's like, this just makes photography so accessible to everybody. Because there's not like, if you got $10, you can find a camera, right? Like, it just opens up the floodgates.
And I think a lot of it too is like, we have a camera on our phone, but like, that's not as fun. It's not as fun as like having
an
additional piece of equipment, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, this new Sony, whatever, or like that little Elf camera, having something different to pull out. People who are inclined to take photos, I think, feel that, I mean, it goes back to the gear. Like, it feels, this is a different thing. It's nicer. Like, it makes you want to shoot, I feel.
It's an experience, right? Like, I find that I gravitate towards cameras that create an experience. And I also think there is a reality to, like, beyond the gear being a physical device, like, it is a community thing, too. It's a conversation starter. I love the social aspect. Like, I will stop anyone anywhere in the world and be like, what is that? What are you shooting?
Yeah.
What is that thing? And then it's like an hour long conversation, and it's the most fun because you know you're both in this like nerdy world of like discussing photography.
Mm. Yeah. And nothing makes you happier than seeing like a gaggle of teenagers with their little,
oh my God, it's so cute.
You know, digital cameras so like around their wrists. Like, I'm like, this, yes.
I love it.
And I for like, that.
As someone who is on YouTube talking about this stuff, like, it's the best. I get stopped by a lot of young kids who are like, oh, we love like your reviews of this, that, or the other.
Oh,
and it's
cool.
Just that, like, I'm obsessed with youth. Like, I love kids. I love like watching kids grow up. I think it's such an I'm more fascinated by like what it must be like to be a kid now versus how I grew up. I'm just like really interested in that. And I, as a theme of things that I always like to photograph, it is kind of youth culture.
Yeah.
And I just love being able to sit down and talk to like a 20-year-old about like what they're shooting and why they like cameras and what
it
is
about. That should be a series on your YouTube.
I know.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I started a couple of, you know what, the interviews are so freaking hard. I'm bless you guys for doing a podcast. It's just it's so much work to coordinate and then like trying to film it and get three cameras going and edit. It's just like a lot of work, but that would be kind of where I want the channel to go in 2026.
Oh, that'd be
preview.
So cool. Yeah.
Because there are so many great people doing very cool stuff. And even like, I really don't care if it's professional or not. I just like, I'm curious and really passionate about the form of expression and however people do that. Oftentimes it's really interesting when they're not professionals because they're figuring out how to get that done in a way that is, you know, it's almost, I studied oral history. I was a big journalism person in college. And to me, it's like a visual documentation in the way that oral history is. You know, it's like people just living their lives, but you get to see it in a different way. And I just love that. It just fires me up.
Who is that photographer? Laura Greenfield? Is that her name?
Lauren Greenfield.
Yeah. With, you know, all the 90s teenagers.
Totally. Yeah. She's
so
great.
So good.
I love all that stuff.
There's just endless amounts to learn. That's my favorite thing of the show and talking to people in general or buying a Magnum video course or, you know, there's
totally.
Just so much to learn. And any chance you... I'm a big fan of when, you know, the light bulb goes off and you've figured it out or you've learned something new. And it's there's just something so fulfilling about learning. And and
I mean, it's
moving
a meditation.
Forward,
it's a practice. Yes.
It's just so good. It's so good.
It is. It's like essential. It's so funny because like people, you know, I love the Pauly B series where like he interviews all the street photographers. Like I could just watch that all day. And,
me
you know,
too.
He always ends with the question, like, why do you shoot? And it's like, I've always asked myself that question because I am, again, the philosophy part of it and everything. And I'm always like, why am I so obsessed with this? And it's like, I don't have an answer for that beyond like, I don't have a choice.
Well, runs
like,
in
I
your
have
family,
to.
For sure.
I mean, there's that for sure. Yeah. But I don't like, I don't know how I have actually, and I think it's a good discipline to try. I have tried to like spend a week not taking a picture.
Ugh,
it's
ouch.
Freaking hard. No way. It is like not even maybe possible.
It's you say that and it's like, it's when I'm too busy and I can't shoot for myself, I feel it. Like deep, you know, I'm like, I got to get out. I got to get out. I got to do something.
100%. I mean, I've been very, very fortunate where like I sort of fell into a job at an early age. Like I started on the other side of the camera. I started as an actor and then was like on my second gig. I was like, wait, what's that person doing behind the camera? I want to do that. And quickly moved into like, ooh, okay. So like the person who puts all this together is the producer. And so I just started going hard and I don't produce now, but I love production so much with my whole heart. It'll never not be a part of me. Like, so I was just like super fortunate because my job as a producer took me traveling everywhere. And so I got to just take my camera with me and just capture all this stuff. And it was just a dream. Like that's to this day, like, I'm like, okay, whatever I do professionally, I have to be able to travel because that's what I want to document.
I could cry.
I know.
We'll be right back with listener question for Allie right after this message from our sponsor.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. We've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We talk shop. We develop some film. We laugh. We also try to get former guests for these. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Like we say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Z_Noble_James_, aka Zachary James. And his question for you, Allie, is what are cameras you've repurchased or come back to after a long time of not using? You're the perfect person for this question.
Yeah, I mean, there's a long list. Well, I will say, like, pretty much the whole channel was built off of a lot of cameras that I repurchased because I was, like, the 5D from Canon, things like that. But I would say, like, ones that weren't necessarily for the channel that I have repurchased myself, a lot of them are film cameras, actually.
Okay.
So
we love that.
I think I mentioned this earlier, but the Mamiya 7 II, I have repurchased 3 times, which is ridiculous. And then I had the Pentax 645D, which is like their first medium format digital camera.
Okay.
I have purchased twice. I actually just looked at those pictures again, and I always do this. I'm like, damn it. I think I should try it again. There's something interesting about that camera. I don't know if I fully want to pick that up again because I do really like my GFX 50S. I think I'm good for life with that. But there's something about those files that are kind of interesting. So I'm like, I consider it from time to time. And it's just ergonomically the most fun camera to shoot with. It's just like shooting a 645N.
It's just a
really great ergonomic camera. And then I think another camera that I have repurchased more than once and I still love and think about is the Pentax LX film camera. Love that thing. It's so compact. It has brilliant lenses. It's like super sophisticated metering. And I was just talking to someone about that camera. I was like, oh, shit. Should I get that again? But no, I'm going to hold on my film cameras because I actually have more than I need right now on that front.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of any other film cameras that I've definitely been like, reacquiring. You know, I mean, like, honestly, some of the sort of more modern cameras, the Panasonic G9 is one I always love to go back to. And I did sell it again, and I tried the G9 too. And it's just like, it's just the ergonomics of that first model is just so wonderful. And I think about that one. I've not acquired it for the third time just yet, but I wouldn't count it out.
I love this, like giving permission to, like, you could, it's okay to sell and rebuy. I always, well, like, I once I sell it, I'm like, well, I can't because I sold it, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's really important because I do think I certainly fall into this trap of, oh my God, what if I sell it and I regret it? Like, right. Okay, well then just fucking buy it again.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Exactly.
But the thing about that is, like, you know, it's like triple the price.
Well,
you
that
know?
Is, that is a real,
that's the part that
possible
not,
issue.
Not
yeah.
I have a couple, like, I did that with the RB67. I'll never let that go again. And the Yashica Matte, the G, whatever that one is.
Yeah, the TLR style.
I've had that. I've had both those cameras probably four or five different times. Yeah. But yeah, you can always buy it back. It's unfortunate.
Yes, that's good advice.
It's unfortunate that the prices do go crazy.
It does. But, it does cause the stress as the price increase for sure. Because every time I've repurchased something, I'm like, except for this is the upside of digital. Digital goes down. Film does not go down.
Right.
So that's where I'm like, I hold on to those more than I do my digital cameras.
Mm.
Makes sense. Okay. We're going to segue into the other part of this, which isn't too, well, I guess it's a little different. If you had to pick one that you couldn't sell or rebuy, like this is the one you're never getting rid of. You're on your desert island with the magical film repair place, everything. What's the one that you'll keep forever? What's your desert island camera?
Dude, that
it can,
is
it can
such
be digital.
A hard question.
Don't.
Oh yeah, it can be digital. Yeah, don't we always
don't
see,
let
yeah,
it.
Yeah, tell people that.
Yeah, unless, like, do I get endless film developing and scanning?
Oh yeah.
It's a magical island.
Best island
that.
Ever.
I mean, truthfully, I can't even think about what camera it would be because I am very much someone who's like, just put the camera in my hands and I will use it. One of the cameras I really want to pick up again, which I won't because it's still stupidly expensive, but I bought a long time ago, like 2010, I think it was, the Fuji GF670. I don't know if you know that camera. It's like the folding camera and it shoots 6.7 and 6.6 and it's got the fixed lens 3.5. And it was such a cool camera. And I just remember I was like so enamored with it and I bought it from B&H and I just, you know, like woke up in a night sweat because it was more money than I'd ever spent on a camera.
Yeah.
And I was just like immediately was like, return. I'm sending this back. I can't keep this. But it was so cool. And I was like, that would be so cool to pick up. If I ever go to Japan and like score one really cheap, I would definitely get that. And in terms of digital, one that I just don't think I could ever part with. Oh, man, that's really, really hard. I don't have an answer. I really don't, because I do feel like with digital, it's kind of interchangeable a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have that sort of like romantic relationship with one camera. I just don't. It's weird. Like, I don't know if that says something about me, but I'm like, I will shoot anything. Just give it to me and I will shoot it and I will be very happy.
That makes a lot of sense with digital, though. Like, that makes complete sense to me. Because it doesn't really matter which one's in my hand whenever I shoot it. They pretty much all do the same thing.
Yeah. And I like, I actually love the sort of novelty of new cameras is why I like shoot so many of them. So I don't have like a deep affection that would cause me to feel like I can only shoot this one forever.
Hmm. It'd be so sad to only shoot one camera for the rest of your life.
It's impossible for me. That would never work.
So I think you already answered this second part of the question already, the white whale camera. Like, what do you wish you could have?
Oh, yeah. I think that would be it. I mean, again, just like for the novelty of shooting it again, because I just remember it made such an impression on me. And I just thought it was so cool the way it like folders down and it's so easy to travel with. Mm. You know what white whale would probably be, actually? I've never shot large format. So just like, I'm not specific on the camera, but like just trying a new format would be pretty cool, actually. I'd be into that.
Man, you got
I'm trying to learn too. Maybe we should go shooting.
Yeah,
try
there you
go.
Do it. I love it.
I got scans that I negatives I got to scan. Timothy was trying to help me, Jerry, like rig my V600 with an iPad. And I was like,
oh my God.
I was like, I like got it to sort of work. And I'm like, do you think, is this out of focus? He's like, I don't know. It could be the scan. I'm like, I don't even know if I did it right yet. So
we just got to call Marcus. I'm like, Marcus, you just have to tell me everything because I got nothing here.
Let's go buy coffee. Let's get him whatever he wants. Exactly. Come teach us, please.
Oh, man.
Too funny. Anything else?
No, that was great.
I mean, so much
fun.
Yeah, Allie, this was what we said just when we were off a second ago. Like, this fills our cup, and thank you for taking the time to fill everybody's cup. I'm sure people are going to get a lot of great stuff out of listening to this episode. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for doing this, because so every week is just such a delight to be able to hear, you know, someone's story and their background. And, you know, we're just a bunch of nerds hanging out.
That's it. Really amazing. Where can everybody check out the channel, check out you?
Yeah, well, okay, so 1 month through cameras on both YouTube and Instagram. And then I do have a Substack, which is a bit more broad, I would say. I talk a little bit of AI. I talk a little bit of, it's all generally centered around the arts, but in different aspects of it beyond what I do on Instagram. And that's called Liminal Frames. Yeah. And that's where I be.
Yay.
Great. Timothy, where are you?
Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups, some YouTube stuff. Easiest way to find those, just go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. Website, timothy.makeups.com. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
I am Chris B. Photo on pretty much anything. If you search that, I think I'll come up, hopefully. we are Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Threads.
Yeah.
That's it. Allie, thank you again. This has been phenomenal. We appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you all soon.
Bye. First off, Chris and I would love to thank Allie for coming on the show. You're like a kindred spirit, Allie. We love what you got going on. Your YouTube channel is amazing. Your family photos are fantastic. Just an all-around great conversation, good hang. I feel like a lot of good tidbits for people to pull out of this episode. So, Allie, you're the best. Chris and I can't wait to see, you know, what the future holds for everything you're doing. And just greatly appreciate you coming on the show and hanging out. Thanks, Allie. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only developing hang nights over there, a bunch of stuff in the archives, and, you know, like we always say, Patreon is definitely the best way to support the show. For the patrons that already support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. You definitely keep the lights on. You keep everything going. So thank you. Thank you so much. Guys, that's going to be it for this episode. Only a couple more episodes left for the year. So keep an eye out keep an ear out for, we got, I think, 2 more episodes, one including our end of the year wrap-up episode that Chris and I do every year. So keep an eye out for that. If you made it this far, thanks so much for listening. You guys are the best. We'll see you in a couple weeks with a brand new episode. All right, later, guys.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.